if you focus on markets you know, if you focus on areas that you know, if you can investigate, you know, you can do well right now.
You're listening to Ice Cream with Investors, a podcast that is dedicated to teaching you how to better invest your money so that you can live a more intentional life. I'm your host, Matt Four, and it is my goal to teach and empower you to remove the roadblocks to your financial success.
All right, Mark, welcome to the show.
Matt, thanks for having me. Looking forward to the conversation.
Absolutely. Well, we like to start with the difficult questions here. What's your favorite ice cream?
I'm a Penn State grad. They would rip away my diploma if I didn't say that Penn State University has the largest on-campus ice cream creamery.
Does it?
Because it is if you ever visit there, you're in the middle of a bunch of cow fields that are, makes it's sense. A big ag school, and those cows make ice cream. My favorite flavor there, without a doubt, is Peachy Paterno.
Interesting. Now, did they have free ice cream everywhere at Penn State? How does that work?
It is extremely cheap. They make massive amounts of ice cream. All the dormitories and the dormitory cafeterias had free ice cream, all you ever wanted. But they make their own cheese, yogurts, cream cheese, everything.
I had no idea. And Peachy Paterno is the ice cream you'd recommend if we're in that area?
Absolutely. That is my favorite. Not just because I was a football guy either.
Gotcha. Well, tell our listeners, what's the scoop? What do you do today?
Sure. I am the CEO of Member Business Financial Services. We just call it MBFS to make life simple. And we are a credit union owned company that helps out real estate investors and their credit unions.
Awesome. Well, I brought you on the show because I'm very interested as we go into more of 2024 here, your insight into the lending environment and what you're seeing from a rate perspective, all those sorts of things. But before we get there, I know we were chatting. You've done a little bit of real estate in your time. Take us back. Where'd your real estate journey begin?
Yeah, absolutely. I grew up in the coal regions of Northeast Pennsylvania and really like that piece. And after I've gotten into the lending environment, I did have some, I was your kind of executive with some small rental properties, smaller investments. And subsequently, the kids came into the way and I kind of pushed those off and enjoy what I do. Part of it is I am the least handy guy in America. So my operating costs are typically a lot higher. But I've been into that. I understand both sides of it from the lending side and as a real estate investor, and really enjoy this area of the world.
I'm going to challenge you a little bit, Mark. You've never seen me swing a hammer, so you have no idea how unhandy I am on this side of the equation. I joke, if you see me swing a hammer, you'd never know if I was left-handed or right-handed.
My wife says, if she sees me put up a wall or anything like that, she would tell people, don't lean against the wall.
Gotcha. Well, two peas in a pod over here. So at MBFS, I want to take us at high level first before we kind of get down into it. Credit union. It's something that a lot of us have heard about. We've seen on the corners of our local main streets and things like that, but not a lot of us really understand what a credit union is and how it differs from a bank. So start us off with, what is a credit union? How is it different from a bank?
Sure, absolutely. And when you drive by your local credit union and one third of Americans belong to a credit union. So a lot of the listeners here, they belong to a credit union, and maybe it's their primary place. Maybe they just got their auto loan or mortgage, but a lot of people have that relationship. And when you drive by, it looks the same. It has a drive-through lane and ATMs, and they give car loans and checking accounts. And, in my case, real estate investment loans. What's different is when you look under the covers, in that what a credit union is, it's a not-for-profit financial cooperative. So, we're really looking to serve the communities. We're looking to give people the best deal we can, pay a little bit more on your money, save you a little bit on rates and fees for your loans. And it is the biggest difference is it is managed by an elected board of directors who is comprised of the memberships, similar to other cooperative industries.
So my understanding too is like a credit union has a specific charter for who can be a member as well. Is that correct?
Absolutely. And back, I would say even up to the mid to late 90s, if you saw a credit union, it was generally more of a teacher's credit union or a local government workers credit union or a factory, you know, and it was just kind of that business had a credit union. And that's actually how I got into this industry is they really kind of expanded out the laws and expanded. It was really almost impossible to help out small business owners and real estate investors prior to that law change. But really that's changed a lot where, you know, most of, I tell people, if you're driving by a credit union, there's probably a 95%+ chance you could go into that credit union and open an account. What you find is that most credit unions are regionally based, maybe in their metro area. Some are a little bit larger, maybe surrounding states. There's a couple what pure nationwide credit unions, but most of them you'll find are much more profile and that concept of a community bank or a region, smaller regional bank.
And what I find as a benefit to that is they know your market. They work in your market. They're dictated to kind of direct funds into that market. So if you're on the outskirts of a big city, they care about keeping their loans in that local demographic and local geographic area to keep them working. Is that a fair assumption or?
Absolutely. You know, we call it, I always say it's kind of like the small business Saturdays that you hear around the holidays. You know, you want people promoting and helping your local businesses. You know, we do that 12 months a year. The deposits come from local people. And those deposits are then lent out in the community, helping out local people, local businesses, local real estate projects. And yeah, a lot of people, you know, especially the bigger banks, what I find is that they tend to say, okay, we want this market. We don't want this market. Whereas the credit unions will say, we want the market where you're at and we're at. We're not going to say we're not going to lend in Scranton, Pennsylvania, when that's our headquarters and that's where we do. Whereas some, maybe the big banks will kind of fluff something like that and push it away.
Gotcha. Well, what I really think in this conversation is interesting too, is this idea of like a portfolio lending company, a company that keeps their loans in house versus like a Bank of America or JP Morgan that will sell those off. So if that's a new term for some of our listeners, can you talk through like agency debt through Fannie and Freddie and portfolio companies that keep their loans on their balance sheet?
Sure. One of the pieces that real estate investors, particularly newer real estate investors, don't understand is the concept of where does your money come from? And that's where you talk about the agency debt, maybe the Wall Street debt. You know, so this Fannie and Freddie, it tends to be very large, cookie cutter, stable transactions. There's a high investment in terms of equity into it, and it has to fit the box. If it doesn't fit the box, they don't do it. Now, what I'll tell you is when you're getting into that agency debt, that is always going to be, tends to be your cheapest money. You know, and if you can go through that process, do it. 99% of transactions don't fit that box. And that's where it comes into portfolio lending, which are banks and credit unions, especially credit unions, where we're lending out our money for that transaction. So that, but the good news is that we're beholden to our standards. We're beholden to our underwriting so that we can make that local decision on your money by the local lenders, as opposed to some third-party transactions where the money is packaged up, the loans are packaged up and sold off to some security with pretty strict rates and terms and conditions beyond that.
Yeah. So just to simplify it, when you go into Bank of America or name Fortune 500 bank, they are not keeping that loan in-house. What they are doing is saying, hey, does it meet these 25 different criteria that Fannie and Freddie will ultimately back so that I can go sell it off to the next guy, recoup some of my money and go do it again? They make money on the transactions. Where a portfolio company says, hey, this is my buy box. I want to own properties or lend on properties that meet this criteria, local market, cash flow ratios, all those sorts of things. And if it does, I might be a little bit more expensive, but I'm not going to require you to meet all of these standards that Fannie and Freddie might have so that I can sell it off because I'm keeping this debt in house.
Yeah. And actually that process is one of the reasons why credit unions have an advantage, kind of a unique advantage in that nothing we do at a federal credit union can be charged a prepayment penalty. Whereas when you're dealing with the agency money or third party money and it's sold off, they tend to have pretty strict prepayment penalties that can really block you from that transaction and refinancing it. Now, when rates were 3%, 3.5%, you know, nobody cared about what their prepayment penalty was because they know this is as low as it's going to go. Today's world, different process and different thought process.
Yeah, so I didn't know that. That's federally mandated that there's no prepayment penalty?
Absolutely. It's part of the Federal Credit Union Act. I like to say we're nice people, but we couldn't do it if we wanted to.
Gotcha. Well, that's interesting because we acquired some debt in 2021 and 2022 that was floating rate. And one of the decisions, I get questions from investors all the time, like, why did you do that? And one of the decisions is this prepayment penalty. So I can take fixed rate money, but if I refinance out of the debt or sell the property before maturity, I'm usually going to have to pay the amount of interest I owed from that point until the loan matured. And when we thought that we were going to sell some of these properties in 5 years, and I think it's not as black and white as, wow, interest rates were cheap. Why didn't you just go with the cheap debt?
Yeah. And sometimes when you're especially new into this process, you tend to say, what's my rate and what's my payment? What are those payments based off of? And that's it. Where in the commercial side, there are no consumer protection laws. It is buyer beware. And if you don't understand all those nuances in there like that, oh, well, the law is not on your side. You need it. It's in your loan documents. It was probably in your commitment letter. So, you know, that's something you might have just glanced over and it might not be applicable until you call for a payoff on your loan.
Right. Right. And I'm glad we're having this conversation because I speak with a number of newer investors. And the reason why I got into commercial is because I met my 10 limit for Fannie and Freddie. I was going to my local B of A mortgage lender. They were underwriting my debt. There was no problem. I went in for my 11th property and they said, you're out of compliance now. We can't underwrite this loan because most people don't realize Fannie and Freddie can only subsidize, I think, 10 loans. Fannie, 10 for Freddie.
Is it? Yeah, and actually it's even been reduced down even more now these days.
Perfect. So, and as such, I mean, it's a program to help new buyers buy properties. It's not a program to help investors go scale their portfolio. So had I had a good credit union on my side, I probably would have kept on going down the single family route to acquire more properties because I was working with somebody that could hold the paper at the end.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's really where we come into play. And the one nice thing about the credit unions is, you know, as you know, where's some of the better places to go in and talk with them about your business? It's where you have your accounts and relationships and we know you. And that's what's nice for somebody who has a day job and they're just doing this to supplement their income, work towards retirement, you know, have another hobby. Where we deal with so many people who are just those part-time people or maybe working towards a full-time profession in real estate. But we're somebody that you can have that transaction. And a lot of what we do, you know, everybody's deals sometimes make sense, but we want to know the person behind it and that you already have that account there really goes such a long way in helping us work with you and build that relationship.
Yeah, you're kind of leading me to water here in the fact that I think one thing that you can do as an investor to make your job easier in terms of acquiring debt and acquiring loans is to be presentable, right? To make sure that you have a relationship, to make sure you understand what they care about, the lender cares about, which is usually deposits and a relationship. What are some of the other things we can do to prepare ourselves as borrowers to separate ourselves from newer investors or people that mostly you don't want to work with?
Sure. And one of the pieces that annoys most people to no end is many times when somebody says, what do I need to do for apply for the loan? They'll give you a checklist. And whether you agree with this checklist or not, give them everything on the checklist. If they say they want 3 months bank statements and you think they only need one or two, give them 3 months. And because that will make your process much, much easier and really get you better, faster, quicker decisions. So really have those. And sometimes, hey, we're all busy. If it's an accountant we can get information from, you know, put us in touch with that accountant. We're more than happy to do that. So really keep it there. And the other piece is we want to understand this project. And okay, what's your plans for this? Are you buying it on the cheap and want to renovate it and upscale it and go up market? And the other piece that we like to know is what's your dreams? What's your visions? What's your plans? Because, you know, the first transaction is always the hardest with somebody. You know, I always say it's kind of like that eighth grade dance. We're getting to know you, or you're getting to know us. Everybody's standing there, you know, what do we do now? But we also want that relationship going forward and want to be able to work with people in the long run, in the long term. So it's much easier to talk with somebody and say, yes, we can help you out with where you're going, but also help guide us on our credit criteria. You know, if you come to me and you say, hey, I want to add one property a month and I never want to put any cash into the transaction. So I'm going to say, okay, you know, let's have that reality check of where we want to go and grow. You know, because it's one property, just because one property works, you know, we'll sometimes see people grow too fast where they can't manage it. And that's sometimes as much of a risk for a lender as anything else, is somebody outgrowing their business for whatever reason.
Yeah, when you started off with the requirements, I mean, as a general best practice, if you've gotten one loan, whether it's your primary mortgage or an investment property, the requirements are going to be probably pretty similar. So yes, Showing up with day one and saying, hey, Mark, I'm interested in this property. And oh, by the way, here are all the documents that you're probably going to ask for already makes Mark's job a lot easier if he's in that lending shoes, to make it easier for him to go upstream, which makes you in a better position, I would think.
Yeah, absolutely. We all have bosses. And in the real estate investment space, you know, it's not like a car loan where if you don't pay me back, I just come take your car, we sell it, and we move on. You know, if this, your success is our success for real estate investors, because when they go bad, they don't go a little bad. They usually go really bad. And it's a lot of time for you. It's a lot of time for us. It's very expensive on everybody's part. So we want to make sure you succeed. And also, sometimes, you know, credit analysts who's sitting down and looking at this can really give you neutral, insightful financials. So sometimes when we come back with questions, it's not that we're trying to be difficult. We're trying to make a better decision, and we could ask and want to understand the numbers. Now, if we were just, you know, a widget shop and punched the numbers in and came out with a yes or no, you know, anybody can do that. You know, we put in and really look at these loans, and we're asking questions because we want to understand who you are, and we want to make good decisions and make sure you're also putting yourself in a good spot, not just for now, but in the future.
I'm glad you didn't say that you were going to send Uncle Vinny down to see me if the loan didn't work out. But I think most people and most listeners are pretty well aware of the 25% down traditional mortgage. What other type of lending products are there out there that a credit union could offer? How can we get creative in this situation as a borrower?
Yeah, we tend to do we do some package and portfolio loans that helps people with that down money and equity, you know, pulling equity out of one property on that second mortgage and bringing it through to the next deal once you get a little bit more. You know, sometimes it, especially in the bigger metro areas, those down payments can be a lot. Mm-hmm. So we do look at either, you know, deposits or stocks and investment accounts as ways to do it, package up a few different properties once one's a little bit more seasoned and get that through there. You know, but we also, you know, the credit unions, you know, they're really good with the consumer products. So sometimes people just pull money out of a home equity and use that as a down payment and package that all together. You know, because at the heart, you know, we're still probably 85% consumer organizations. So we can, you know, work with you on some different ways to make those equity requirements a go.
Yeah, just the idea that you were mentioning cross-collateralizing things and seeing where equity was hidden that you could tap into already makes you way more flexible than any traditional bank that I've been to.
Yeah, it's I always say if I went back to a bank, I'd probably get fired in the first week. Because it's really just sitting there, you know, these members are part of the co-op, part of the community, and particularly for real estate investors, you know, we want good, healthy, habitable homes and in the community, because let's face it, you know, if you have a unit, it's going to get filled because just about everywhere in America, there is a lack of homes. There's a lack of housing. And with interest rates the way they are, and also it's not as advantageous to own a home with your standard deduction as it used to be. So sometimes it's these real estate investors are providing a service that we all need in our community.
Yeah, we can go into a whole deep dive right now on supply and where supply is going to end in 2024. But I want to take you down to a snapshot of just the financing environment that we're experiencing here in 2024. So just to recap, in 2020, 2021, we saw record low interest rates. 2022, they started to creep up. 2023, they exploded. Now, as we sit, traditional mortgages are 7%. The Fed funds rate's 5.25%, let's call it. A lot of talks on, are they going to cut? Are they not going to cut? I guess as a guy that works in this business every single day, and give us a high level on where you see the financing and lending landscape.
Sure. Hey, fellow investors, before we dive into our next segment of the show, I wanted to take a quick moment to talk to you about a fantastic opportunity for you to invest with me. As you know, here at Ice Cream with Investors, I'm passionate about real estate investing and helping you navigate the exciting world of wealth creation through real estate. And that's why, for the first time, I'm thrilled to tell you about an opportunity for you to invest alongside of me. Over the past 3 years, I've been investing in multifamily, mobile home parks, car washes. I've even become the bank and lent out money to fellow real estate investors on a short-term basis. And now you can come join me. If you would like to jump on a call and learn more about this opportunity, head to icecreamwithinvestors.com/invest and find a time for us to connect. And now back to the show.
You know, the interest rate market is one thing. And you know, I do believe, and you could tell me I'm wrong and bring me back here and say we were wrong, but everybody believes we're kind of at the peak of this cycle. And I think history is going to say they really kind of overshot it in terms of impacting the economy and people's cost of living. So we do believe we're going to see that rate reduction. Now, from our lending perspective, you know, we generally lend on 5-year fixed rate loans, and we're also lending our own money. We're not borrowing the money. So we're looking at our cost of funds out there. And where I see and since we don't have a prepayment penalty, we're trying to balance out, you know, getting as good a fair yield. But the last thing I want to do is 9 months from now, everybody calls to me and says, I want to refinance and renegotiate my rate. It's not really, it's not a good deal for anybody. So that's really our balancing trick right now. The bigger issue out there when you talk to a lender today is liquidity. Because, you know, I don't know if anybody has noticed, but groceries tend to cost a little bit more than they used to. Cars cost more, housing costs more. And what you're seeing at the banks and credit unions is deposits are being chewed up much more than they ever have been in the last 30 years. So you're what now, when you call your local lender, nobody ever says, "Hey, we're out of money. We're not lending." What they do is they manage it with interest rates. They manage it with terms. They manage it with conditions and make things a little bit tighter. So really, when you have that conversation today, you want to talk about, are you lending? What's your liquidity situation? And that will get you a much more honest answer than asking about rates and terms and conditions, because financial institutions' liquidity is driving their actions today more than anything.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned no one's ever not lending. I heard this on the podcast the other day. It's like no bank will tell you they're not lending. They'll just give you a ridiculous term sheet, and that will be their answer on whether they're lending or not. But when you say liquidity, so help educate us a little bit. Like,
sure.
How does a credit union look at their internal liquidity? Is it deposits? Is it cash on hand? Loan reserves? What is it?
Sure. I'll give you some inside baseball here. So for every dollar of deposits you have in your account, the credit unions will generally lend out about 85 to 90 cents of loans for that. So credit unions do borrow money a little bit, but it's much more of a one-to-one transaction as opposed to the fractional banking where they're lending a dollar of deposits and they're lending it out 10 times. And that's why it gets very expensive, because they keep borrowing and borrowing and borrowing. So a credit union will generally lend out 85, 90 cents and have that, you know, every month loans are paid off and then they make new loans. And they put out CD specials to grow those deposits and get new members and things like that. What you have seen, not just in the credit unions, but with banks, is when everybody was flush with deposits and they couldn't get money out the door, what did they do? They bought investments. What were the interest rates like in 2020, 2021? They were low. So a lot of people are stuck with mortgage-backed securities that are underwater and they can't sell without taking a huge loss, or they have investments that are basically, you know, kind of like the Silicon Valley Bank situation, where they have investments that they can't cash out. So that's where you see some lenders have basically a frozen balance sheet, where there's dollars sitting there, but they're tied up in investments that are underwater right now. So that's the conversations that you haven't had to do for a long time, and you have to know which questions to ask your lender, other than, "Hey, are you lending?" "Oh, of course." You know,
yeah.
Tell me about your liquidity. Tell me about the free flow of money. And sometimes it's very regional. If you're in a high cost area, some of those banks and lenders have had more stress versus kind of some of the third tier markets where they haven't had this huge run up, or demand is solid, but it's not booming. And they have plenty. We have credit unions with plenty of money to lend out there.
Yeah. When you mentioned SVB, my understanding was that was more of a treasury management issue, right? They had invested a ton of this money into 3%, 2% treasury notes. Treasury runs up to 4 or 5, mark to market. Now that is a way less valuable asset. So when somebody calls and asks for their money, they don't have it. And so they start selling off those assets, which show a loss, which now they have to report, which causes a bank run. And all of a sudden you're in a bad situation.
Yeah, and generally credit unions and lenders in general, they keep those excess funds into investments that historically could be cashed out very easily. Yes. Well, with the run-up in interest rates, it became a self-fulfilling prophecy. By putting all of their money into the safest investments in the universe, they were wildly underwater and undervalued.
So this is going to be a pretty interesting question to ask you. I believe that everybody is talking about the tidal wave of commercial real estate loans that are coming up for 2024 and 2025. I believe that you'll see more, you won't see defaults, you'll see adjustments basically to those loans. I'm losing the word right now, but you'll see adjustments to those loans. And part of that reason, I believe, is because if a bank forecloses on one of those loans, they now have to mark to market that specific property. And if they do that, some regulators will overlook and say, hey, what's your entire portfolio worth if just this one asset got cut in half? What is your perspective on that?
Sure. What we're seeing is the bigger the property, the bigger the market area, the bigger issues you're having. So if you're, you know, and you see that in the skyscrapers, in some massive suburban office buildings, big flex space, if your building was used as a call center and the entire call center got taken out. And we're also seeing if you had some areas you were rented to a law firm or some other big office building, like a white collar type job where people could be like me and sitting at home doing their job. When those leases come up, they're getting downscaled or canceled. That being said, other segments are doing phenomenal. Office, you know, large metro office building is stinks. And it's going to stink for quite some time till, but back in 2008, condos in Miami were worth pennies on the dollar. And how much money would we have to be if we scooped them all up? It just took a long time to get that. A lot of retail space, surprisingly, is still doing well. It depends on your location. If you have industrial space, especially, self-storage, warehouses, people are buying things, but it's just sitting in warehouses to be moved, and those places are booming. And once again, those second and third tier cities and properties, if you live in a small town, small city, commuting isn't a big deal and people are still going to work. If your office is in Manhattan, you're doing everything you can not to go have the 2-hour commute into the office. But if you're in Topeka, Kansas, and if you live on one side or the other and it's a 15 or 20 minute ride to work, work at home isn't such a big deal. Mm-hmm. So, and that's where if you focus on markets you know, if you focus on areas that you know, if you can investigate, you can do well right now.
Yeah, it's interesting you said that about office. I kind of have this theory that San Francisco office is probably the most undervalued asset class in the world right now. Because I just generally believe you can't replicate Silicon Valley. It's a very iconic city. It's going through a lot of troubles right now and a lot of problems, but it's no different than Manhattan in the 70s. And they will probably figure it out. And tech will continue to grow. That ecosystem will continue to grow. And you can own that valuable real estate right now for pennies on the dollar.
Yeah, absolutely. If you can afford to put some money out there, these spaces will fill up. The one piece that I think is gone forever is the aging malls in small and mid. I don't think those will ever come back. And we're actually seeing some. I'm seeing one close to me where, all around it is nothing but big developments, and they're just going to implode this thing. And Bill put new big box stores, apartments, and things that are today. So that's the one area that I try not to give too much advice, but your aging 70s, 80s mall that we always I used to walk around as a teenager and cause all sorts of problems in, don't buy that one.
Yeah, I grew up in a town of like 7,000 people, and everybody from around the town came to the mall to shop. And I think the options are too abundant now to go shop elsewhere online and all those sorts of things. And the TAM, the total addressable market for that area is too small to support what you're saying, a small regional mall. So
yeah.
I tend to agree with that thesis.
Yeah. And really it's the medium and big box stores. It's the lifestyle centers. I can't tell you how many times I've seen the store that was in the mall build a new store very close to the mall. And we now have this big empty space in the interior entrance mall. So,
yeah. Well, Mark, fantastic conversation. Did we miss anything on credit unions that you think is impactful for listeners to know about before we transition into our next segment here?
No, I really just encourage people, you know, you may not have thought about a credit union, but it really fits you, and check us out.
Yeah, actually, this spurred a conversation. There's a local credit union here that I've been eyeing for a while, and it spurred a note in me to go down there and talk to them because I've got some non-traditional needs I need for not only real estate, but business purposes. But I want to shift us now to our last round. We're calling this the four toppings. Our first one is, what is your favorite book, or what is a book you've read recently that's given you a paradigm shift?
I love the whole Freakonomics series of books.
Yes.
And it really has changed and given me insights into not understanding what's going on in the world, but why.
Yeah. So sumo wrestling, you had bets on the overrated person and the underdog one. Is that what
yes.
you mean?
Yes.
Yeah. Read the books if you didn't catch that joke. Our second one is, what is the best piece of advice you've ever received?
You know, I had an old football coach that I was around, and he really focused on just get a little better every single day, because you never stay the same every day. You just get better or worse, and just focus on incremental improvements a little bit every day.
I love that. And our listeners know I'm a big fan of that. It's never one big action that takes you there. It's consistent, small, daily habits that get you there. Our third one is, what are you most proud of in your life?
So I've really, you know, when I took over MBFS, I was the fifth CEO in 5 years. We were a company of three people, and our own customers couldn't stand to be around us. Our service sucked. And we've really built it into a large company nationwide. And we get to help a lot of people in the community who might not have other received financing, or we're giving them pretty good service. So I'm really proud of the job that we've done in building up this company because of the situation it was in 12 years ago.
Amazing. Well, our fourth and final one is, if you could sit down and eat a bowl of ice cream with anyone, dead or alive, who would it be and why?
So as I mentioned, I grew up in the coal region of Pennsylvania, and generations ago, they came to this country. All my relatives came to this country to be coal miners. Most of our grandfathers, we didn't get to meet because of they all either died in the coal mine or got sick in the coal mine. So I would love to go back into the people who came here, you know, 100 plus years ago, and just talk about the journey, what they saw in America, how it's been, you know, the opportunities, and just that journey from, you know, depressed areas of Eastern Europe to the United States, and what they thought.
Isn't that crazy? Like, you would board a boat without your family to head to a distant land where you don't speak the language for the opportunity to work, to have a better life for your family. I mean, it's crazy to think about, but I'm glad
Absolutely.
A lot of people did it. Well, Mark, fantastic conversation. If our listeners wanted to reach out to you, learn more about MBFS, hear more about credit unions, where is the best place we could point them?
Sure. Check out our website, mbfs.org. And if we don't have a credit union in that area, we'll try to connect you with one that does real estate investments. Or you can connect with me on LinkedIn. I'm very active. I love to talk with people and see if we could help you out.
Awesome. We will link those in the show notes. And then, Mark, thanks for coming on.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Ice Cream with Investors. If you like what we serve you here, it would mean the world to me if you would like, subscribe, and leave a review on your favorite podcast app.